In looking at the passage we are doing two things really. We're seeing the development of a character and how this rather reluctant servant becomes a spiritual giant. And also we see the hand of God in the affairs of, it's the affairs of a nation, but in the history of Israel, of course, it's like a church in a way, it's church, nation, you cannot distinguish them. So we talk about the Israel of God, and we're really talking about the church, aren't we? Now, they've come out of Egypt, and it was quite something to bring them out of there. They're not an easy people. And Moses himself really has to be burdened for his people to do the task that he did. They can be very inspiring people, but they can also be a very disappointing people. We've already seen some great disappointments and how Moses almost broke his heart over them. But we come now to, they've come almost to the borders of the promised land, and nothing can be more wonderful. I sometimes think, maybe many times this century, many churches in Wales, that they may have come to the border, the edge of revival, and something happened. Certainly one nearly broke out in 1920-21, but something went wrong. And we thought we were very near in 1959, but something went wrong. The Holy Spirit is very sensitive. But I know we can overrule that by saying, well, it's the sovereignty of God, and that is a comfort. But nevertheless, it is our responsibility. Now, we come to this area now. Now, we're looking at number 13 to begin with. Just a little glimpse of that. Moses is our leader, and we're looking at verse 16. And he's been commanded to send out people to have a look at the land and what it is like and who is there. And these are the names of the men which Moses went to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua, and Jehoshua. And Moses sent them to spy on the land of Canaan, and said unto them, get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain. So they are told where to go. And see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. Now, it's important to know. You need to know what difficulties you encounter. Our Lord in the New Testament says before a person thinks of responding to the grace of God, that he should consider, is he willing to see it through? Has he counted the cost? Because we have that important verse, don't we? He that endureth to the end shall be saved. And they also want to know, is it a worthwhile land that God has promised, and when the land, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds. Necessary information when you want to know what's ahead of you. What kind of people are they? What kind of fruits and what kind of crops are there? What kind of earth, fruitful or otherwise? And do they live in tents, or are they more established and they live in strong walled cities? What is there? What lies ahead of us? And so that is a very wise thing to do, and he's been commanded by God to do this. Remember, this is the land which is going to be their inheritance. And what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether it be wood therein or not. And be of good courage, and bring of the fruits of the land, that the time was a time of the first ripes of grapes. So that is what they are sent to do. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men came to Hamath. Now that is the task that they have to do. And he gives a few details. And after their coming and going, they were there 40 days, in verse 25, in chapter 13, and they returned from searching the land after 40 days. So that's our background. Now, let's see the result of all this. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, it's Kadesh Barnea, and brought back word unto them, unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruits of the land. So things are looking good. And they told him, said, we came unto this land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. So God had promised to them that this chosen people of his, that one day they would have their own established land, and it would be very beautiful. There would be plenty, flowing with milk and honey. And so it is like that. And to prove it, we have brought some of the produce for you to see. Nevertheless, and they're honest about this, remember it's Joshua and Nun we have here mainly. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. Now, that's the negative bit, quite honest about it. They're saying that it's certainly a rich land, it's certainly a very fruitful land. It's all God promised to us, but there are people living there. And they're not just nomadic people, wandering tents here and tents there, but they are established, well-founded cities. And the walls are very great, very thick. And worse than all, the children of Anak, the most frightening of all people. And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. So they made a pretty thorough investigation. They got the names of all the tribes, they named the one that they feared most of all, and they got the names of all the others. So it's a pretty thorough search. They had 40 days to do it in, and they did it and brought the results. And then this is the conclusion. In verse 13, Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. Now that's an important little line, isn't it? Now you can see that Caleb here is a man that believes in the promises of God. And when we come across him later, that even though there's great disappointment ahead of us here now, Caleb didn't give up on God, and God didn't give up on Caleb either. So you'll find that, not in every congregation, you'll find some that, not by their own choice, but by God's grace, they are strong, and they help others, and sometimes they're not listened to, sometimes they are. And he said, that is a position, there are enemies there, and they will hold tenaciously to their land, but we are many. More than that, God is with us, and we are well able to possess the land. Now what I learned from that is this, that God's people should not be fearful. If there is a promise from God, and we honestly and sincerely believe it's a promise from God, we should not then hesitate. There are some things that are folly. A folly is the same thing as blind faith. You know, you just go because I think, I feel, God told me, I feel, and they fit God's will into their desires and they go into disaster. But even though God has promised this land, they still had a good look at it. You know, they still use their intelligence, they still use their abilities, and they came with an accurate report of the land. At the same time, Caleb said, measuring our army, our people, those people there, and overall at the promise of God, we are well able to overcome it. Now, he's a spiritual man. He's not an impetuous man. He's made a thorough search. He doesn't say, is a land flowing with milk and honey and there are just a few people here and there. He names all the tribes. So he's quite honest about it. But the men went up with him, said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak. No, they described them a lot because they were big, strong, and mighty, and fearful. We saw them, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. So we were in their sight. Now, the same information, but presented very differently. One says the sons of Anak are there, we know they're pretty tough. And they give the names of all the others. But it's a fruitful land. And these come, they don't talk much about the fruits, and they say, well, it's very frightening. There's some powerful tribes that are able to overcome us, and of course there's the giants, you know, the sons of the giants, those big men, you know, their name is called Anak. And who wants to fight an Anak? You know, don't go there and see Anakites. So it's strange, isn't it? You can have a report of one incident by two different people, and one not hearing the report of the other, and both have the same details, but present them in a very different way. What's wrong with these? Fear. Right? Fear. There's such a thing as folly, where people rush in, not looking and investigating. There's such a thing as faith. Faith is realistic. Faith ventures to what it does know. You know, it knows. We have faith in God because we know God is reliable. So here we have this between faith and fear. Fear is catching. You must have come across situations. I don't know how many of you have been in your various occupations in committees, and all is going well, and then one person says a word that is fearful, and fear spreads. It's a catching thing, you know, and think, oh, maybe after all, it's more than this than we thought, and our losses may be greater than we have considered, and fear grips them. And when fear enters, fear paralyzes. Whatever is God going to do with a set like this? What can he do with them? But one thing we know, they are God's people. But he deals with God's people. But he's dealing sometimes a rebuke, reproach, and other times in blessing, but it deals. We come then to our main chapter here, chapter 14. And the people were very frightened, and you can just follow as I go along. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night, so they had a good old howl, you know. They'd come out of Egypt. And it was very scary to come out of Egypt. And Pharaoh was very powerful. Yet they forgot the miracle, how the sea opened and how the Egyptians were virtually eliminated. And they saw that, they brought the safe down. And despite their disobedience and their sin to God, Moses had prevailed. But here they are, and they're howling, they're crying. They are forgetting God. It is easier to listen to the voice of fear than it is to the voice of faith. Faith is realistic. Faith doesn't hide facts, you know. Even in the presentation of the gospel now, a person might say, well, when you're presenting the faith, if you become a Christian, it's going to cost you something. In a sense, it's going to cost you all. Your love, your time, your devotion, a change of lifestyle is going to cost you, so consider well. Yes, you know, the riches in Christ cannot be compared with what was in Egypt. So think well about this. Well, this is what we have. They cried, they forgot God. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And if you see the number of times they murmured in the Bible, I wonder how many times that word is there. Do you know what murmuring means? Mourning. Complaining. Right? It's such an easy thing to have a good old grump. It's so easy. I mean, you think how many times we grumble in a day. Oh, it's raining again. You know, or we could say, you know, I'm healthy, a house, I got clothes. You know, we could say that, but what do we say? Oh, it's raining again. Typical, all right? and whichever country you like to blame, either Ireland or England, one of them, and say, it came from there. It's not our fault. It came from the east or it came from the west. You know, we could all mourn. And it's so easy to be grumpy about things. It's the wrong kind of spirit, but it's more serious here. These are mourning against God's men. That's a different thing. I wish I'd kept this pamphlet. One of the American ministers I met, or I don't know if I met him or not, anyway, he sent me some correspondence. And I wish I'd kept it. It was such a pile of stuff, you know. I'm a very tidy person. I don't like keeping piles of stuff. So I have purges, and anything can go away in a purge. And I think these went in a purge, but it really was good. There were pamphlets that were given out on the value of family worship. And the idea of it was, godly homes will produce a strong church. Good. And he shows the struggles of family devotions and how to maintain it. That our children get used to that. And whether they want to join me or not when they're older, that's up to them. But they know that in their home, that their father and mother put God first. And it showed that picture, and it was a very lovely one too. So if we want a good church, a strong church, then where does murmuring stop? At the family altar. It stops there. And it doesn't get any further. It's very wonderful, isn't it? It really is. Because we do murmur. We're murmurous by nature. But it stops there. But they murmur against the leaders. Now, we are told in various places that it touched not the Lord's anointed. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt. Or would God we had died in the wilderness. All the things to say. You know. It's like saying to Moses, we wish we'd never called you as our minister. Or Aaron, we wish we'd never had you to help him. Would God that we'd been left in Egypt. At least we have decent food there. And at least we're sure of a roof over our head. And even though there were no wars to fight, we had masters, but still we could get to terms with that. And we were a tough people. Or we could have died in the wilderness. That would have been easier than facing the Anakims and those people. So they murmur against them. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land? What's he done it for? What's he think he's doing? To fall by the sword, and that our wives and our children should be a prey. Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? That's even worse. Let's go back. Let's say to Pharaoh, we're terribly sorry. We're awfully sorry we lost all those men when the sea covered them. We apologize. You can punish us. And we'll work extra hard for half payment. We'll do anything but take us back into Egypt. Now, when you think Moses now, he was leading God's people. They're hardly recognizable as God's people. And they said one to another, let us make a captain and let us return into Egypt. So it said, let's finish with him. We've had enough of this godliness. Let's get a leader after our own hearts. A leader that will care for us and take us back home. And let us live the way the Egyptians live. And let us be like Egyptians, even though that we shall have to serve them for many generations. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. So there's a scene. A grumpy, grumpy people, murmuring, blaming them, blaming God. What was God playing at? What was he doing? And wanting to choose another captain of a different kind of sort. Another kind of ministry, really. You know, that wasn't so involved with God. But only partially, maybe. That kind of thing. And these men fall on their faces before them. And Joshua and Caleb rend their clothes. So it's a sad scene. How low can a nation get? How low can God's people get? And they're speaking to all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search is an exceeding good land. So they're trying again. If the Lord, now listen to this, if the Lord delights in us, and does he? Ask yourself the question. They're reasoning with them. They're quite illogical. But they're reasoning with them. We are God's people. We are the sheep of his pasture. If he really loves us, and remember the promises he gave, and how he said that he had pleasure in us, and how he said he delighted us. I've forgotten the lovely words that God has said about us. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which flows with milk and honey. That's exactly what will happen. We're on the borders of this land. And it's God's will that we should go. Come now. But don't do this. Only rebel not ye against the Lord. Neither fear ye the people of the land. Now look what he's saying. Don't rebel against God. Because really, in grumbling against Moses and Aaron, are they not really grumbling against God? They are, aren't they? Rebel not against God, neither fear the people of the land. So two things. Don't sin against God, and don't be afraid of these people. For fear is a terrible thing. For they had bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Are we living in an age where we could very easily get afraid? And where we could say, let's appoint captains that will compromise with the Egypt that we are living in, that's all around us. And let's come to terms with the world. Let's come to terms with Egypt. That's where we came out of, that's what we were saved from. Let's not exactly go back, but let us be kind of, let's fraternize with them. And let us find captains that will be past masters in fraternizing between the worship of Jehovah and friendship with the world or with Egypt. It's much more comfortable. And you're not singled out. And it doesn't cost you too much. He says, don't fear them. They're nothing. But all the congregation bit stone them with stones, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. They're actually going to stone or Moses and Aaron, and I take it, Joshua and them as well. And the Lord said unto Moses, now remember now, what has happened in this scene now, God has entered in. Now this is a very wonderful thing, but it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. It's a fearful thing to be a minister. It's a fearful thing to be an elder deacon. Fearful thing to be a Sunday school teacher. It's fearful all around any responsibility in the things of God, because we are handling the things to do with the will of God. So it is a fearful thing. So God comes to speak to Moses. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? Now you can see now then what God is showing here. These people are murmuring, but they are provocative. I find them really provocative. How long will it be ere they believe me? For all the signs which I have showed among them. Now then, we could talk the same way, can't we? Should we lack faith today when we think of the I know you cannot live on past revivals, but neither could they live on past blessings, but they knew they took place. Who could have brought them out of Egypt but God? You know? Who could have opened the sea but God? Who could have seen them through the difficult times but God? And he did many wonderful works for them. And he says that very plainly. They are provocative people. What can I do with such poor material? I will smite them with a pestilence and disinherit them. Well, that's a terrible thing, isn't it? You know, there's words now that are really fearful. I will disinherit them and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. I will have a mightier nation, but with them, this lot here, these grumbling, murmuring people that are here, I will disinherit them. And there is a sense of how this was carried out. And Moses said unto the Lord, now he prays for them. His prayer is remarkable. Then Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egyptians shall hear it. For thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them. Do you remember what you did? You brought them out of Egypt. And they will tell it to the inhabitants of the land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, hast seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by day time, and a pillar of cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night. They know of all these miracles. Don't think for one moment, Lord, that they haven't heard of the miracles that you have performed for them. They've been watching, and they know, and reports have gone from tribe to tribe, from village to village, of the wonderful works of God. Now, if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of thee will speak, saying, these who already know of thy greatness, this is what they're going to say, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness. What a God. And the Egyptians probably say, we don't want that kind of God who seems to deliver you and then let you down at the last moment. And now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great, according as thou hast spoken, saying. Now then he reminds God of his words. The Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy. You may ask me, Moses is here too, don't you think so? He might well say, well, Lord, I absolutely agree with you. Destroy them. I've just had about enough myself. And if you can bring a mightier people, then do it. These provocative people know the Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgressions, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and unto the third and fourth generation. You're not soft, but nevertheless you're long-suffering. Pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people according unto the greatness of thy mercy, and as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt, even until now. You had to forgive them numerous times along that time. And the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. That's lovely, isn't it? All right. I've pardoned. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all those men which have seen my glory. Now, notice the importance of this. I am determined that there will be glory. All those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. So in a sense it is inherited, aren't they? In a sense. None of these murmurers, none of these grumblers, they should know better. I brought them out of Egypt, they're witnesses of it. I performed many miracles that are remarkable and tremendous, and they're witnesses of those miracles. And yet, at this time, when they come to the very verge of the land that I promised them, they listen to the men of fear rather than to the men of courage. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land wherein he went, and his seed shall possess it. Then later he includes, of course, Joshua. But listen, notice the detail here. There's one person here, there are two, we know Joshua is included. But he singles out Caleb as being rather special here. He's got another spirit altogether. It is not the spirit of fear. It is not the spirit of folly. It is the spirit of faith. He has the spirit of realism. He knows there are dangers there. He knows the sons of Anak are there. He knows there are tribes there. He knows the land is flowing with milk and honey. But what else does he know? He knows that I am with him. And you should know that. So he singles out Caleb. Him will I bring into the land wherein he went, and his seed shall possess it. Now, we know in later chapters, in other chapters, because we have parts, don't we? It's also Joshua, the two, but here we have Benjamin. Now, what did he do that was special? He had followed me fully. You'll find that later in another book about Caleb. He wholly followed the Lord. That is a special distinction about him. You might say, what's special? He's a man of faith, yes. But he was a man that lived by faith in God. His daily life was a life of faith in God. His decisions were once guided, were always guided by faith in God. He lived that way. You know, never further than thy cross, never higher than thy feet. To live like that. And that really is the only place. That doesn't mean to say that you don't give your undivided attention and diligence to the work that you're doing. Of course you do. But your heart is cradled in the presence of God. That you live close to him. That's what Caleb is like, you said. And that's why Caleb brought a very honest, he didn't bring it dishonest, he brought a correct picture, he brought a balanced picture, but he also reminded you that I was with you, and he also told you you could possess it, and he also told you you didn't need to fear. Now, the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwelt in the valley. Tomorrow now turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear from this evil congregation, which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Now, if I can jump ahead, make it a bit more positive. You know, when eventually, 40 years later, the only ones that survive that period of time of these people, Joshua and Caleb. Well, was anybody else with them? Oh, yes, hundreds of thousands of them. But they were the children of those who came from Egypt. So it was fulfilled. Apart from Joshua and Caleb, who were then old men by then, none of them inherited, only their children, because they provoked God. I sometimes wonder, you know, with all the things that have happened in the Christian church, liberal theology, superficial worship, oh, a whole host of things, whether he's allowing us to wander in a wilderness until at last the time is right. I do not know. But it is important to remember that God can be provoked and we can displease God. How long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel which they murmur against me. Say unto them, as truly as I live, says the Lord, as you have spoken in mine ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness, and all that were numbered of you according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Doubtless ye shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. So I gather from that, all those were not of the age or grown and sufficient in the full sense, and these two men. But your little ones, which he said should be a prey, now notice how he picks up their words. Those that you're afraid would be a prey for these terrible people, but your little ones, which he said were prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. And the worth telling, you know. There will be continuation. of my people, of my chosen people. But you will never see blessing. You'll never see glory. You'll never see a land flowing with milk and honey. But those little ones whom you thought that you're protecting, they will see it. And so are Joshua and Nun. And the children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. After the number of days in which he searched the land, even 40 days, each day for a year shall ye bear your iniquities. So for every day that you search the land and despise it, it will be punished by a year in the wilderness. Even 40 years, and he shall know my breach of promise. I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall be consumed and they shall die. And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land, died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. See, it's no careless report. It's a very detailed one. And Moses told these sayings unto all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. And they rose up early in the morning and got them into the top of the mountain, saying, lo, we be here, and will go unto the place which the Lord hath promised, for we have sinned. All right, sorry. We will go in. We regret our murmurings. Sorry, Lord. We didn't mean it. Not really. Deep in our hearts, we believed all along. And Moses said, wherefore now do we transgress the commandments of the Lord? But it shall not prosper. Go not up. Don't go there now. Don't dare. For the Lord is not among you, that he be not smitten before your enemies. Don't try it. Because if God is not with you, you will be destroyed. Even at a short time, from when they wept and cried and moaned and murmured, and then because they heard what God would do to them, oh, well, we don't want that. We don't want 40 years in the wilderness. We'll go in. All right, I'm sorry. But you can't talk like that with God. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword before you are turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up into the hilltop. Nevertheless, the ark of the covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites, which dwelt in the hill, and smote them, and discomfited them, even unto Horemah. Now, we leave it there. It's kind of negative, and yet it's not. It shows us, you see, that God is a God of integrity. He honours even just two men. And the children, the youngsters, of course. The way he disinherits, he does not allow a people who had seen so much and despised his promise when they saw it, to see it. They would not see the glory. Nevertheless, there would come a time when Joshua and Caleb and their old men would enter into that land and would inherit it and would see it. And that's a very wonderful thing. But we see the punishment of God against those who are disobedient. But we see the continuity of Israel. See how slender a thread it is. The thread of the church of God. Sometimes like a thick rope. Sometimes like a slender little cord of cotton or silk or something. It won't snap. because it got caught. Now we're living in a time of a slender cord, aren't we? It won't snap because it's God's cord and that He is with us. Now then, what should we say about God? We can trust God. We need not venture in foolish ways. We need not be afraid. He only asks one thing of us. Trust me. Have faith in me. And when his people have faith, that's a positive. The negative things that we can learn is murmuring. Take it to the altar and leave it there. Godly homes will produce a powerful church. And it's past imagination what God can do with a godly congregation. It doesn't matter if they're mocked. It doesn't matter if they're despised. Because all that matters is that God is with his people. And that is the lesson to be learned here. God is with his people. And the last thing that we must ever do is to provoke him or despise his promises. And the first thing always is to trust him, to believe in him with our souls and with our lives and with our circumstances and with our dear church. Now shall we pray?